everybody. This is Brett, and we're about to get into a live show here in a minute, but before we do that, this is actually, it's going to be me and Gardner from last night on the Liberty Conspiracy, and we're getting closer to this possibility of a unique School Sucks live show 2 times a week, maybe down the pipeline within the next month or so, and that's will be awesome. But for now, I am grateful for the opportunity to do it with Gardner. We again get into some educational issues on his show, so I'm going to play you a portion of what we talked about last night. Before all that happens, I want to read a listener email that I received today. It's from a listener named Daniel, and it goes, "Hey Brett, I hope you're doing well. I've been listening to the School Sucks podcast for a year now, and I must say it has helped to explain in depth some of the insanity inherent in compulsory schooling. In case you're interested, I am currently among the top 15 in my senior class at a high school in South Carolina, myself being 17. I stumbled upon your show in a search for some answers to the issues I have with the idea of modern-day higher schooling and how it is almost forced upon individuals such as myself and those that are my age. I had felt, for various reasons, that this emphasis on always going to college was wrong, unnecessary, and even exploitative in a way. But I could not convince myself to be confident in my judgment. Your show helped me explore what compulsory schooling truly meant and the damage it causes to children who enter the system, which includes myself and most, if not all, of the individuals I interact with. This allowed me to at least understand where I am coming from and what I am coming out of. It is quite sick in a way and sad that nobody recognizes the force, or they have forgotten, or they are apathetic about the issue, or even advocate it blindly. I am now 17, a senior in high school, and my GPA is currently about 4.5 based on the figures I saw last. Attempts to quantify, this is parenthetical, attempts to quantify intellectual ability are quite detrimental to one's natural way of judging ideas. This figure is largely meaningless to me. However, 99.9% of the individuals I have spoken to do not acknowledge that refraining from going to a university is a viable option, possibly even healthier in order to gain experience in the real world. The problem is not with the idea of college itself. The problem lies in the way society sees it as the only option against a life of poverty and living on the streets. Parenthetical again. Of course, they don't take into account the stunning modern-day examples of financial success, as well as some of the greatest thinkers in history. I have been attacked, called an idiot, a future failure, and so forth, when, of course, no one can say for certain the position that someone else will be in the future. The podcast you put out recently, in which you interviewed the gentleman from UnCollege, that was Dale Stevens, and that shows maybe 10 episodes back, if you missed it, was quite helpful in helping me find that there are highly intelligent people who have chosen this path and that there are communities that can support and help those individuals with their own journeys. These individuals care for real value in life, not nice sounding titles next to their names in a piece of paper that absolutely confirms they could successfully sit at a desk for 16 years. I haven't decided what exactly I'm going to do, but at least I know through your show and my own experience how difficult it is to come out of the mental box school can put you in. And then he says parenthetically again, be at this place at this time, feel guilty if you don't show up, etc. Some messages, I guess, that he's talking about from his experience in school. But more important than all of this was the fact that your podcast opened doors that were previously unexplored. Your collaborations with Stefan, that's Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio, Wes Bertrand from Complete Liberty, Jan Irvin of Gnostic Media, and numerous others. I have begun to explore the personal side of these ideas, a side which I know needs the most focus above all else in my life. I do kind of wish there was more Wheels Off Liberty podcasts, though. It is nice to have a laugh with individuals who have some idea of reality. Borderline insanity in Jamie's case. However, I will continue upon my educational process with the tools your podcast helped to introduce, such as the Trivium, a system that is quite appealing to me and undoubtedly highly valuable. Critical thinking is a must. I have made great improvements in this area, but the road to achieving it completely in life is a long one. I have many reservations about the possible disaster scenarios in the future, but ultimately I must take that path that will bring me personal success and happiness. I cannot particularly think of a more reasonable goal in one's own life. I thank you once again. Please continue to do what you are doing and help those who feel that they are eternally bound by decisions they make in fear of authority while being forced into some kind of goddamn building for the majority of their youth. Perhaps I should make the pilgrimage someday to New Hampshire and check out the Free State Project and meet more rational people. Thank you and continue having great success. Daniel. What can I say? I'm just really blown away by that. That's one of the nicest emails that I've ever received, and it really reminds me of why I started doing this show in the first place. I'm always, like, really, really happy whenever I get email from somebody who's still in high school, and they found this searching around on the internet for information about schooling or college or looking for other people who might have expressed something similar to what they're feeling about their school experience. So, Daniel, thank you so much for sending this. And, you know, I apologize, first of all, because sometimes these emails, they do tend to get lost in the shuffle, and I don't always get back to people in the most expeditious manner. But the other thing, too, is, you know, I can't believe I waited so long to dig into the subject of college. I don't think I mentioned it much in the first 100 episodes of the show, at least in depth in any way. We might have talked about it a little bit back in the first Keys show we did when I had who were the guests? Alec Keys. So that was Daniel Royer and Alec Muller. And we talked about, you know, alternatives to education that exist today because of technology. And if you didn't hear the Dale J. Stevens show, I recommend going back and taking a listen to that. Most of the more in-depth research I think you'd probably have to do on your own exploration. I just wanted to introduce the idea to people of alternatives to going to college and people setting up networks similar to Alec Keys, where people can go and prove their mastery of a certain skill. And then once they establish a mastery just through a sort of reputation rating, they can teach other people that skill. Or set up a course to teach other people that skill. Another listener to the show named Nash actually has a website like this in the works, and I think they're still in the alpha phase of that. But I'd be interested in learning more about that, and when that's in beta or ready to go, certainly I'd like to talk about it on the show, because I would like to give people some practical solutions if you're kind of looking out at the rest of your life from the pit of high school. And, you know, things look pretty intimidating and pretty ominous, and there's all this pressure as far as what you should do next and parental expectations and guidance and teacher expectations and what's considered the norm. I understand all that. I understand all that. So I'm glad that this information was out there. I'm glad that I could find Dale. I'm glad that I could find these other people that, you know, had this been 20, 25 years ago, I never would have crossed paths with them in my entire life. And I'm so pleased that that this is helpful to people. So, yeah, I just read this email, so I'm still kind of affected. Well, I'm affected by it. This means a lot to me. All right, so here's Gardner and I from last night. This is the second portion of the show. And I did not promote this effectively, so we did not get many phone calls in the 2 hours. But, one more thing. Two more things. Less than five more things. First of all, when I read an email like this about a young – I mean, this was the goal. And like I said, this is a big deal for me when we can reach people who are still in secondary public school. You might hear something like that and you say, geez, I wish that Daniel was an adult with a PayPal account, because then he could donate some money to School Sucks Podcast. Hey, wait a minute. I'm an adult with a PayPal account and I'm employed and I love this show. You know what you should do? You should go to schoolsucks.podomatic.com. I put something up at the top of the page there all the way on the right side. I need, this is very ambitious, but I need 150 subscribers. We are doing a new website. We're talking about doing live radio. We are doing video. Who's we? That's me. And now I have a new web guy. His name is Tony. So that's not true anymore. We have Mashish, who's working on some graphics for us. And we have Tony out in California. You ever been there? He's working on the website. So, and I didn't get his permission to use his whole name on the show. So once I do that, you'll learn his whole name. You can be his friend on Facebook. All these things that we're doing, this would be a great time to show some appreciation. I need 150 people to offer to chip in on a monthly basis to keep this growing, because I feel like we're in a growing phase. Do you like that? So if you have the means, $6 a month, 20 pennies per day. If you can do that, it would be greatly appreciated. And when the new site launches, I am currently in the process behind the scenes of building a modest bonus content section. This will include some of the past episodes of School Sucks Podcast, most of the supplementals. I'm going to pull them out of the feed. So if you want to hear them for free, download them now. You've been warned. They're probably going to be gone at the end of this week. And a bunch of videos that are unreleased, some behind-the-scenes stuff, us on the webcam doing the live show, and a whole, even some other things. And there's going to be content added to this every week. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to talk about this just a little bit here. It's not really fair to people like Daniel, who maybe don't have bank accounts or credit cards and really are not in any kind of position financially where they can donate to the show, to withhold important content, you know, the stuff that I think is essential. So all that stuff is always going to be free, of course. In this bonus section, we're going to get a little silly. We're going to do more of a wheels off School Sucks kind of a thing. And there'll be some good stuff in there as well. Some pre-shows, post-shows, like, you know, just when we chat or plan a podcast. I just did a show with Richard. We talked like for an hour and a half on either side of what you heard. So, and he gave me permission to release all that stuff in there. We might get access to some of their content at Tragedy and Hope. He's actually planning a video series called History So It Doesn't Repeat. I'm going to go down to Connecticut and beyond that. There's a movie that I was in that was never released. I might put that footage in there if I can get permission from the filmmaker. There's videos of things that happened at Porkfest. So, SchoolSucks.Podomatic.com, the reason, I don't need to tell you that, but all the individual subscription levels are there. If you're already donating, you know, $3 a month or less than $6 a month, you're going to be grandfathered into this premium section if you've been doing that for a while. But what I'm going to ask people to donate is $6 a month. And if you donate more than that and you want to go down to $6 and still get access, great. Doesn't matter to me. I appreciate all the help that you've given already. And if you want to give more, you can, but you certainly don't have to. Maybe I could make like a bonus content section. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. See, I'm probably going to wind up editing this out of the show. So this is the kind of thing that will be in the bonus content section because I'll leave this in. This is like a preview of it, but this is the kind of stuff that's in there, but better. So anyway, in the title of the show today, you probably saw the phrase primary sources. Well, we've learned what those are, you know, after graduating from high school, and maybe we heard that thrown around a few times in college. But the reason why it's in the title of the show today, let's talk about this for a minute, actually, is because I saw this thing called Cite Quotes. I think somebody sent it to me. It's like the true origins of the true agenda of psychology. And it has all these intellectuals and psychologists and educationists from the past 150, 200 years saying these in-your-face kind of quotes about the intentions of these sciences. And there's this quote from John Dewey, who we've talked about plenty on the show before. This is what it says. Teaching school children to read was a perversion, and high literacy rate bred the sustaining force behind individualism. Now, interesting, this quote appears again on this page, but in this first look at the quote, the word perversion is in quotes, and then the sustaining force behind individualism is in quotes, but everything else is out of quotes, meaning that this is a quote somebody took the liberty of basically assembling on their own. And I go on and talk about this in the show, how I can't find a primary source for this. So I think it's interesting, and I think it's representative of, from what I know about Dewey, of his viewpoints. And let's remember, too, that you do not get to be at the top as far as positions of influence of a government bureaucracy that shapes the minds of children by saying something like, "Yeah, you know, I really don't know what would be good for everybody. I really, you know, I just kind of focus on myself." No, that's not how you get into those positions. You get that John Dewey, Horace Mann kind of status by thinking you know exactly what's perfect for every frickin' body. Still, I don't want to start quoting this until I have more information. I like primary sources. I say it again in the show, I blew it once on a Dewey quote. I quoted something, then I could never find where it came from, and I had to retract the quote. Later on, it says, let me just scroll down a little bit. It's got the quote in a little bit of a different form. "The plea for the predominance of learning to read in early school life because of the great importance attaching to literature seems to be a perversion." Now, obviously, the first quote is a sort of reimagining of the second quote. Now, I'm not defending John Dewey, but I'm just trying to make a point here. Somebody took the quote and they made it into what they wanted it to say, pretty much. That's not quite what it says. So they're condensing, even if it's exactly representative of what Dewey believed, what he might have said in a book over 100 pages, over maybe less than that, maybe over just a couple of pages, but they put it into this little package form and then they sell it as a John Dewey quote. So I take these whole quotes and I put them into the Goog. And let's see, I have those open somewhere. All right, this is the actual quote, and it's from the early works of John Dewey's essays. So this is actually written by him, and the quote again, "The plea for the predominance of learning to read in early school life because of the great importance attached to literature seems to me a perversion." Now, let's just take this in the context of a couple paragraphs. The endless drill, with its continual repetitions, is another instance of the same evil. Even when the attempt is made to select material with some literacy or historic worth of its own, the practical outcome is much like making Paradise Lost the basis of parsing lessons, or Caesar's Gallic Wars an introduction to Latin syntax. So much attention has to be given to the formal side that the spiritual value evanesces. No one can estimate the benumbing and hardening effect of this continued drill upon mere form. Another, even more serious evil is the consequent emptiness of mind induced. The mental room is swept and garnished, and that is all. The moral result is even more deplorable than the intellectual. At this plastic period, when images should take hold of the mind, exercise such suggestive motor force, nothing but husks are provided. Under the circumstances, our schools are doing great things for the moral education of children, but all efforts in this direction must necessarily be hampered and discounted until the school teacher shall be perfectly free to find the bulk of the material of instruction for early school years in something which has intrinsic value, something whose introduction into consciousness is so vital as to be personal and reconstructive. It should be obvious that what I have in mind is not a Philistine attack upon books and reading. The question is not how to get rid of them, but how to get their value, how to use them to their capacity as servants of the intellectual and moral life. The plea for the predominance of learning to read in early school life because of the great importance attaching to literature seems to me a perversion. Just because literature is so important, it is desirable to postpone the child's introduction to printed speech until he is capable of appreciating and dealing with its genuine meaning. Pages 263 and 264 of the early works, John Dewey's essay collection by John Dewey. Now, Folks, spoiler alert, John Dewey did have this sort of agenda where there would be certain classes of people for the good of society who would be relegated to lower levels of education, and that obviously includes literacy. You could hear that ideology echoed by Woodrow Wilson. We've talked about his speech in 1909 to a group of teachers in New York. Dewey and Wilson are both these pragmatic, progressive types having considerable influence on American schooling at around the same time. If you just read that, you notice that it's pretty innocuous. Like, I think if I heard, most people in education that I respect say something to that effect, you know, that this drilling is not real education. He even used the word intrinsic in there. And maybe what Dewey is criticizing, remember, these people are not all colluding together. There's a big difference, even though there's some very important similarities. But there's a lot of differences between somebody like Horace Mann and John Dewey. There's a lot of differences between somebody like Horace Mann and Johann Fichte. There's a lot of differences between somebody like Johann Fichte and Martin Luther, if we want to go all the way back to the early conversations in Europe about the state getting involved in this thing called education. So just to clarify on this whole similarities and differences thing, if you look at the writings, the stuff that most of these people in the 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, even right up to Zbigniew Brzezinski's The Grand Chessboard, the writings that these types of people never expected to be available for public consumption, you will see a tremendous amount of discourse and debate on how people should be controlled. But within these circles of intellectuals and psychologists and educationists and court jester philosophers, you know, who come up with a philosophy to please the powers that be, what you will see very little discourse or debate about is not how people should be controlled, but if people should be controlled. They all seem to agree on that, regardless of what time period or location we're talking about. But if you read that quote that I started with several minutes ago, you know, that misquote, and then somebody else pulled out the two pages of this book and showed them to you, what would you think? You know, we would kind of look like fools if we were just quoting off psych quotes. There are websites like that all over the internet where people just do these distillations of maybe what it took a person quite a bit of time to say, and they make it into this nice little neat quote package and put it out there. And this is dangerous. I think it's important to understand the context. I think it's important to understand that Dewey, in many respects, might have been critical of the way that education was working at the end of the 1900s and the early 1800s and the early 1900s in America. Because while Horace Mann was considered to be the father of public education in America, Dewey was a reformer. The system had already existed for some time when Dewey came along. And let me give you another one from John Dewey. This is from The Essential Dewey. This is a book that he wrote. Do I get out a year? No, but I'll give you a page number. 232 says, I believe that we violate the child's nature and render difficult the best ethical results by introducing the child too abruptly to a number of special studies of reading, writing, geography, etc., out of relation to this social life. Now, let's get the bigger picture. This is from a section of the book called Article 3, The Subject Matter of Education. I believe that the social life of a child is the basis of concentration or correlation in all his training and growth. The social life gives the unconscious unity and the background of all his efforts and all his attainments. I believe that the subject matter of the school curriculum should mark a gradual differentiation out of the primitive unconscious unity of social life. I believe that we violate the child's nature and render difficult the best ethical results by introducing the child too abruptly to a number of special studies of reading, writing, geography, etc., out of relation to this social life. I believe, therefore, that the true center of correlation of the school subjects is not science, nor literature, nor history, nor geography, but the child's own social activities. I believe that education cannot be unified in the study of science or so-called nature study, because apart from human activity, nature itself is not a unity. Nature itself is a number of diverse subjects in space and time, and to attempt to make it the center of work by itself is to introduce a principle of radiation rather than one of concentration. I believe that literature is the reflex, expression, and interpretation of social experience, and hence it must follow upon and not precede such experience. It therefore cannot be made the basis, although it may be made the summary of all unification. You know, folks, I'm picking up just a touch of sophistry, you know, a sort of way of talking that is not particularly clear. I think we can get the gist of what he's trying to say. So you really have to read between the lines. And if you look at Dewey's work, you'll find time and time again, he is putting in this idea that young children should be in school, but not learning, you know, these skills. Now, if we're talking about unschooling, homeschooling, I don't care when a young person learns to read. And I don't think there needs to be any timetable. I think that those kind of schedules for having things checked off as far as skills attained, information dumped into the, you know, the clay mold child, that kind of a thing, I think that all comes later. As far as just the bureaucratic bean counting aspects of government schooling. But what did Dewey want these children doing in school? Because he keeps talking about this moral education, this ethical education. So you don't get it in two pages. You don't get it in one book. A couple of years ago, Gardner, who you're going to hear on the show today, introduced me to the work of Samuel Blumenfeld, who was actually a colleague of Gardner's father. Gardner's father worked for the Reagan administration in education reform, and he was trying to do away with the Department of Education. I think Gardner will talk about it a little bit in the show, but found, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So I want to go to Blumenfeld, who has done exhaustive research on this period of American schooling, and he's pretty vetted as far as I'm concerned. I don't think his work is flawless, of course, but here we can get the broader picture, okay? Because like I said, Dewey keeps talking about ethics, but that means, as we've learned by now, different things to different people. So what was this ethical education? And again, we're reading between the lines a little bit. Dewey writes, "The idea of heredity has made familiar the notion that the equipment of the individual, mental as well as physical, is an inheritance from the race. A capital inherited by the individual from the past and held in trust by him for the future. The idea of evolution has made familiar the notion that mind cannot be regarded as an individual monopolistic possession. The mind cannot be regarded as an individual monopolistic possession, but represents the outer workings of the endeavor and thought of humanity." Now, if you understand Dewey, and I think that Blumenfeld does, and I encourage you to take a look at his work, you know, and take what you want and leave the rest behind if you're into this, if you want to get this deep into this stuff. But what we learn about Dewey is that he's the typical progressive intellectual central planner type. where he says to himself, "Aw, you know, I got such good ideas, but these masses, these dummies, they're not going to go for it." Unquote. Put that up on site quotes. John Dewey said it. These dummies, they're not going to go for it. Just kidding. Hey, just kidding. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, folks. I'm exhausted, but we're going to keep going. We're almost done. Dewey recognized in his own writing that the process of change, you know, this interdependent collectivistic society would take time to carve out of a society that at the time was largely individualistic. And Dewey saw this path of gradual change beginning with the way that children are taught to read. That if you go into school and your instruction is in moral education about what, you know, expectations for preferable behavior and not about actually becoming literate, claiming ownership over your own mind, the type of society that people like Dewey, people like Wilson envisioned would happen gradually, would appear gradually over time. It's never A to Z in one leap. And that's pretty consistent with all of these sort of behind the scenes agendas. You know, we're in the middle of that one right now, somewhere in that alphabet. So, you know, that's a closer look. And I hope that if we demonstrated anything here in this massive introduction to the show, that by just not trusting quotes and demanding primary sources, we can actually learn something. So I hope you learned something from all of this. I hope this was helpful. Okay, here's that show I was talking about an hour ago.
If I ruled the world, every day would be the first day of spring. Every heart would have a new song to sing, and we'd sing of the joy every morning would bring.
Coming back at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Thanks very much for being a conspirator. Hitting the post of political disputation, getting into philosophy, economics, moral theory. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and I'm grateful to know that you're a fellow conspirator. Our phone number is 603-835-3360. Our co-host for the program is none other than
Brett Vinat.
And he is of the School Sucks Project. Go to schoolsucksproject.com, and you can see all the really cool things that he's done. We've been talking about some of the, I guess maybe sometimes skirted, not addressed problems of allowing oneself to be inculcated by the state and how it perpetuates its power. But also there's a philosophical, a moral or an ethical desert that is created within us by this happening, and it leads to all sorts of problems, whether it's economic stagnation, massive inflation, the boom-bust cycle, wars, mercantilism, fascism, hyper-nationalism, anger against illegal immigrants, the war on drugs, supposed control over children, the state taking kids away. All these things are all sort of brought about in many cases where people are prepared for these things through a school system that focuses on the group and nationalism and being a good citizen, rather than fulfilling the desires of the individual to lead his life the way that he would want to. And Brett's School Sucks Project does a great job of this. We want to go to the phones right now, and going down to New York is our friend Mike Martelli, and Mike is calling in with some thoughts about what we've been discussing. Mike, thanks a lot for coming on to the show. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are you guys?
Oh, so far, so good. Mike, you have some thoughts about individuality in school systems, and I'd love for you to offer this to the audience and to Brett as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, people just do what they're told. So if they're told to vote for either a Democrat or a Republican, then they pretty much do it. You know, I don't believe in the conspiracy where, you know, Ron Paul, they're rigging the votes and all that. They just, you know, people believe in whatever authority figures put up before them. Mm-hmm. And that's what they accept as their reality, and they just continuously perpetuate that.
Well, do you think, you know, you mentioned something off air that I thought was very interesting. I think to a certain extent, youngsters, young people are often very skeptical of authority, but at the same time, they're very accepting of certain authorities. Tell us about the experiment that you were discussing. This is something Brett has mentioned many times before, and I think it's very valuable to see just how human beings can be put into these situations where they would do things that normally they'd be shocked to think people would do.
Right. Well, I'll actually read it because it'll be easier, but what they did was in the Stanley Milgram experiment, they advertised for volunteers who acted as teachers in a test of memory. He then used a confederate to act as a learner. Whenever the learner, sitting in a separate room with the arm strapped to an electrode, gave a wrong answer in a word association test, the teacher administered a shock by pressing a lever on a control board. With each mistake, the shock intensity increased. Hearing the learner's cries of increasing agony, most teachers with the right urging would continue to deliver the shock up to the maximum shock level of extreme danger. Unknown to the volunteers, no actual electric shocks were given.
That's pretty amazing. Brett, you've spoken about this, and Mike, I'll leave you on here if you want to comment a little bit after Brett responds. But Brett, you've covered this in your podcasts at School Sucks, haven't you, the Milgram experiment?
Yeah, and the reason why I was dealing with the Milgram experiment is I was talking about my own experience in a residential school where some of the practices that were standard procedure are things that today I would consider to be abusive. At the time, we never questioned any of it because it was procedure of the school, and as a young, obedient college graduate who deferred to authority, I thought that, you know, why would I have any questions about anything that was being done? And this was, you know, it was a therapeutic school, and it had therapeutic aspects, and it had a lot of people working there who were very concerned about helping these young boys and girls get better. But, you know, that kind of authoritative environment also attracts people who want to be in positions of authority just because they get off on that. They like the way that it feels. And that just deals with the behavioral aspect.
Right, right.
You know, I think the most important thing was that the Milgram experiments was a study in obedience, because what Milgram was trying to understand is why people in Nazi Germany were so willing to follow the agenda. I mean, this experiment began in 1961, so that was within a couple of decades of the Holocaust. And I think what Milgram was trying to demonstrate was, look, do all these people feel the same way? Were they all on the same page saying, yes, this is a good idea. Yes, let's do this. Or was it people just being obedient to authorities, kind of trusting authorities to say, okay, well, I knew, or they know what they're doing. I mean, after all, Hitler called this one of the worst atrocities in history a solution.
Solution, yes. You know what's very interesting? I was listening to a program that my friend Bobby recommended that I listen to. It was over at the Mises Institute. You know, I listen to their audio sometimes. I love them. They're great. And it was very interesting, Brett, because Tom DiLorenzo was speaking, and he was talking about Lincoln, the administration of Lincoln, and also about the extermination of many of the Indians. And after Lincoln, one of the things that they did was they sent soldiers out driving across the plains to intentionally wipe out buffalo, because they knew that the Indians hunted buffalo. And in killing as many Indians as some of the units could, and killing the kids, taking their land, burning things down, they actually called that the solution.
Yeah,
to the Indian problem, they said. And it's incredible to think that this sort of thing can happen in the United States, and it can be overlooked. Last week was the anniversary of the 70th anniversary of the internment of the Japanese.
Yeah.
You know, hats off to George Takei for speaking about it. even though, unfortunately, he seems to have a bit of a double standard when it comes to the state's authority to control people's businesses and education choices and things like that. But at least he, you know, brings this up. So this is not that far away for people to say, oh, well, you know, we are this group and the enemy is they. You know, they are the enemy. I mean, we look at illegal immigrants, so-called illegals, as we say. And it's so easy for people to call into radio programs and to blame so many problems on illegal immigration and to use them as scapegoats. And I remember, Brett, we're just up against the clock. I'm going to try to mention this real quick. There was a situation where some Americans had wandered into North Korea, and they were being held, right? And I thought to myself, everybody's up in arms about these Americans being held by the North Koreans, but the American government does that to Mexicans all the time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll come back more with Brett Vinat at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Existing even without a billion-dollar government bailout, this is Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Liberty Conspiracy Audio is live at LRN, the Liberty Radio Network. Thanks for listening to us over the radio waves or streaming us at LRN.fm. And maybe you're talking about things in the chat room, whatever. Hello, everybody. Also, go to LibertyConspiracy.com, and you can post in our forum. We really appreciate it. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and along with me is...
Brett Vinat.
And Brett is the man behind the School Sucks Project. I hope you'll check it out at SchoolSucksProject.com. Our phone number is 603-835-3360. I want to thank Mike for calling in from New York. Mike, you rock. Thank you, my man. And Brett, I want to continue discussing some of the things we've discussed so far, but just sort of open it up to any of the thoughts that come to your mind regarding some of the issues that are out there or some of the things that you've been concentrating on yourself.
Sure. You know what I was actually doing, Gardner, while we were coming back in there, I was flipping through some of these quotes that I sent you. This, what is this, psychquotes.com.
Yeah, what is that?
Revealing quotes on the goals of psychiatry and psychology. Now, of course, these are not the goals of everybody who ever participated in psychology or psychiatry.
Yeah.
But there's a few interesting ones here, and I was just scrolling through looking for names that I knew or buzzwords that I was familiar with. John Dewey shows up right here. I would like a primary source for this one. So if anyone's listening and they know it, you want to Skype in or call in and let me know, because I think I did buy into, like, I was overly enthusiastic one time about a Dewey quote that I found that was just so perfect that I put it into the show, and then I realized I couldn't find a primary source for it, so I actually wound up having to retract it. I won't do that again, because right now I'm stating I'm not getting a primary source for this, but I'd like to go and look for one. It says, teaching school children to read was a perversion, and high literacy rate bred the sustaining force behind individualism, unquote. So I'm just going to take that and stick that into Google and see if I can get, you know, something in Google Books or something with some context around that, because I really encourage people to do that when they see these kinds of things, because there might be that quote might be mirrored on 30 or 40 websites that are all sort of sympathetic to our position on the history of education, but there might not be a primary source on any of them, and that might be because there's no primary source in existence. So I think one of the things that we were talking about on your show while you were out, Dale and Jason and I were discussing, are we too eager to find these bad things because it makes our point for us?
Sure.
So, I would encourage, I mean, like, you can go and read the things that Dewey wrote and you'll find plenty of completely horrifying, ideas in his books. And he wasn't even the worst of these people. Once you go back to, the days of Horace Mann, who was, about a generation and a half before Dewey was on the scene, and even further back than that, maybe another generation into Prussia, where you have people like Johann Fichte, who was one of the intellectuals behind the education system there. So,
yeah. Well, I know that you're familiar with Sam Blumenfeld.
Yes,
of course. Yeah, heavily influential on people like John Taylor Gatto and things like that. And You know, I don't know if I mentioned to you, but my dad worked with him in Washington, D.C., and helped edit one of his books called NEA, Trojan Horse of Education. He had to go by a pseudonym at the time because he was working for the Reagan administration trying to eliminate the education department. And, of course, he wasn't able to do it, so he left. He's like, I'm just wasting people's money. I'm not going to be able to stop this. And so he came back home. And my dad, I think, was like 67 or 68 when he came back home. And it was interesting because when he met Sam, Sam actually has a lot of, and you've probably looked into this as well, a lot of the notes that were taken, the minutes that were taken at some of the most elite education meetings for the NEA, the National Teachers Union, and others, where they have actually overtly stated, that many of these very influential people had stated that they wanted to make sure that there was a blue collar that could continue doing the manual labor in the United States of America, and that the intelligent kids would be able to learn on their own. They would find ways. So, for example, the look-say method of reading, then called, for a while it was called literature, then they called it sight word reading. They've given it all these different names. It's all, you know, basically trying to treat a word as a pictogram. That was actually brought in intentionally by some of the people who were involved in these things. And Sam gets this information. He has the records. He has the minutes of these meetings. And he puts it out there. And it's amazing to find these things. And I'm glad you mentioned original sources, because with the original sources, you got the evidence right there. It takes a little extra time to find these things, but it's really worth it.
Yeah, and one of the things I was most proud of myself for finding, I think I at one time found it online. I don't remember the name of the book. I'm kind of trying to scan for it right now. But it was by a gentleman named Inglis, and he talks about the six functions of education. And one of them he called the propedeutic function, which was this sorting process where we do an assessment of what a child's abilities are, and then we steer them in the direction based on those abilities. So we'll kind of assess them through the environment of school. It's like the Einstein quote, you know, if you judge a fish's intelligence by how well it climbs a tree, that fish will think it's stupid. So in the context of school, their intelligence is judged by strangers, and then they're sort of directed where they need to go as far as their contribution, what their predetermined contribution will be by these authorities to this collectivistic society.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is pretty I have it right here, the propedeutic function. I found it.
Yeah.
The societal system implied by these rulers will require an elite group of caretakers. To that end, a small fraction of kids will quietly be taught how to manage this continuing project. First of all, I need to point out this is Gatto talking about it. So this sounds like really kind of in-your-face, honest. About what
it's his interpretation of what they've said.
Sure, sure. And I go into this in an old show. I think it was called Conformity and Compliance. It was like maybe the sixth show that I did. And I read from Inglis's book in that show. So I encourage people to go back and check that out. And they could probably, if they saw the show notes, they could probably get the link to the book too. But how to watch over and control a population deliberately dumbed down and declawed in order that government might proceed unchallenged, and corporations might never want for obedient labor. The differentiating function, I think, was the one that I was describing, which was the fourth function, where this is kind of like how far will your training go? And that's kind of what you're speaking to, too, as far as the look-say method of learning to read. It essentially makes a person effectively illiterate.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And you know, Sam is one of the most educated people I've ever met, and to see a guy with that intellectual power taking on these people who try to stifle intellect and stifle opportunities, it's really, it gets me very emotional, Brett, because you know, and I know, I mean, you face these kids when you were in school. You know what some of these school systems do to the futures of real human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stunning. I mean, you can't even, I mean, they, they might have only been able to do as bad if they were to physically abuse these kids or you know, lock them up in cages. These are virtual cages in which the kids have to spend 7-8 hours a day, and they are inculcated, and at the same time they're inculcated, many of them are kept from having the opportunity to investigate things themselves because they're kept illiterate. We'll take a break, and Brett, love to sort of take it in a slightly different direction. You inspired me when we come back. Sound good?
Sure.
We'll return at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Flying back at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Liberty Conspiracy Audio is live. 603-835-3360 is how you get in touch with us. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, along with
Brett Benat.
And we are co-hosting the program tonight for your Thursday night pleasure, my friends. Thursday night pleasure. We've got a lot to discuss. There are always so many interesting things to hear about when one talks with Brett. And we were discussing a little bit earlier whether or not the not whether or not, but some of the people who have found original sources to show that there were strains throughout the history of American public education. There were individuals or groups of individuals who tried to push to actually keep a certain cadre of the American public illiterate to have a strong workforce. It sounds like conspiratorial talk, but there are people who have the notes and the minutes of these meetings. And whether or not these were the ones who were the most influential, look at the works of people like Sam Blumenfeld and look at the works of people like John Taylor Gatto, and you'll find that these people actually were very, very influential. There's a lot of disastrous stuff that's been brought about in education over the years. And, Brett, I wanted to give you the opportunity as we close off the program to tell people a little bit more about ways they can escape it and ways that you've been considering getting School Sucks Project and the School Sucks podcast and other things involved with giving people an opportunity to find alternatives in other ways to educate.
Well, sure, and I think I hate to have to keep saying this because I almost feel like at 2 years, like still pointing out problems, it's getting to the point of being an excuse. But the government school system just keeps making new problems and issues for us to talk about. And I think that one of the first steps, obviously, to getting yourself out of a hole is realizing that you're in one, admitting to yourself that you're in a hole, and recognizing how deep it is. And, I really encourage people to kind of up their intellectual self-defense, and that comes from, you know, understanding the basic tools of learning, the grammar, the rhetoric, the logic, or I should say grammar, logic, and rhetoric to be in the proper order, to understand things like doublespeak, to understand things like the use of logical fallacies and how powerful language is in controlling people. Now, if you're 16, 17 years old, I think this is all within your grasp. This is a project that you can begin on your own as an autodidact, as a self-educator. If you're a parent, I would recommend investigating, you know, homeschooling, unschooling, networking with other people who do education, or I should say let education happen in this way. And they don't work on the time frames of the school, and they don't succumb to the pressure, the social pressures of this is what other people in the neighborhood do. And I think that one of the reasons why so many people put up with this schooling system is because they don't want to admit to themselves that they're paying $8,000-$10,000 a year in property taxes, and all they're getting out of it is damage to their child, even though there's so much evidence of that. And I've dealt with this with, at this point, probably hundreds of parents. I've had parents cry in front of me about the experience that their kid had in school. So, I think it depends on who you are and where you are and what your goals are. But upping this intellectual self-defense, I would say, is one of the most important things that people can do as far as starting to work their way out. And, knowing is, what percentage of the battle is that?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's a very key component.
I've made it more than half, I think, on my show, because there are so many aspects and so many issues and so much misinformation in and around the government school system and all of the things that are made possible by the government school system, like the media, for example, thrives on the dumbing down effect that school has. So there's always going to be new problems for us to try and head off and address, but I think that there is no prescription that I can give to people like, okay, now that we know all this stuff, here's what you should do. I know that when I realized all this stuff, I was in the process of teaching and I had to make some pretty dramatic changes in my life. I had to get out of the school where I was. I had to change directions professionally, and I had to do that a couple of times as my thinking and my philosophy changed even more.
Yeah.
And eventually I started, like I said this on your show last week when I was hosting with Dale and Kurt from Michigan, I said, start a podcast. That's what I did because it was therapeutic for me, you know, to be able to talk about some of this stuff that I just really felt isolated. Like there weren't too many people that I could share this with and they would say, oh yeah, like certainly not my peers, like people who were doing tutoring or teaching. They probably wouldn't want to hear that, but I had so much stuff to say, and I think so many of us have so much to say about so many different issues that it might be good to start a blog or a podcast or a YouTube channel and start expressing yourself. The more we can get of this information out there, I think the better chance it has.
That's one of the things that makes me feel so good. It gives me such great satisfaction, Brett. Out of knowing people from the Free State Project, and now the circles through, you know, electronic and telecommunication means that allow us to communicate with other people who are far away, and to realize that, you know, when I started, I remember when I was starting thinking about the concept of the Liberty Conspiracy, I talked to my dad before he passed away, and I was like, Dad, you know, what do you think, Liberty Conspiracy or Liberty Project? And he goes, well, the conspiracy idea sounds a little bit sinister, and I was like, yeah, but it's an ironic thing, and I decided to go with conspiracy, and I love the idea of a circle of people that is, you know, growing more and more that, you know, you can turn to people, and they have great ideas and great resources, and you can say there's an alternative out there, and it really is, as you say, it's very therapeutic to be able to talk about these things. And also, I think, in talking about them, it allows us to reaffirm our own education. Because in many ways, I think that by exploring these issues and getting other people's ideas and hearing from other people, we get new vectors to approach. You
certainly.
Know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I remember you had a great conversation with a girl who was the valedictorian of her high school. And, you know, and she basically got up there and gave this speech that just blew the concept of government so-called education out of the water.
Right. Yeah.
It was very amazing. I would never have found out about her if I didn't know about your podcast. And I don't know how you found her, but it was great. And I'm sure you learned some great stuff from her, too.
I don't remember how I found her either, but that kind of speaks to the whole thing that we're talking about. People knew what I did because I put myself out there and I put these ideas out there. Somebody stumbled across that video, I think, as it was going viral on the YouTube. It maybe had, the first time I saw it, I think it had like 50, 60,000 views. It's probably 700,000, 800,000 now, if not more. And they said, this is right up your alley. I was able to find her on Facebook. I was able to have her on Skype a week later, and we did that show together. So that's how, I mean, and 20 years ago, her and I, our paths may have never crossed our entire lives. And that was a very inspiring thing for me. Her name was Erica Goldson, if I didn't already mention that. And she went to a high school in New York and just did this incredibly courageous thing where she gets up in front of not only her entire class, but all the faculty and staff at her school, and is the only person in that crowd willing to say that kind of stuff. But I don't know how many people were thinking it, and I don't know how many people that speech really resonated with. But good thing for YouTube, because she became like a real star once people saw that.
It was great. And, you know, it reminded me, I remember when I was in high school, we always had this Flag Day thing, which we called Forced Patriotism Day. And, you know, they brought in soldiers and they had all these things about the flag and all this stuff. And I had been brought up in Amherst, New Hampshire, and during the Bicentennial era when, you know, there was a lot of patriotism around and, you know, the idea of the founders, the founding fathers and everything, things that are inculcated in to us that somehow we're part of some great and glorious lineage, so therefore anything the United States government does is perfectly acceptable now, you know, this sort of thing. as far as the international warfare and things like that go. There were some distinctions that some of the conservatives who thought they were tied into the founders would make about taxation and regulation and things like that. But when it came to, you know, international influence, the United States was the great paragon of awesomeness, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I remember when we had this Forced Patriotism Day a few years later when I was in high school. I think it might have been my friend Peter Witten and also my friend Ian McCaleb, who played for G.G. Allen. They brought a flag in, and we're in the big assembly, and we're out in the gym, and they have all these people, and they're playing the national anthem, whatever. They unfurled the flag backwards and upside down.
Oh.
And it was awesome. And, you know, it's just a little memory that I have of people who said, you know, we don't believe you. Brett, we're up against the clock, man. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's great. And I'd love to do this again, and we got to do it in person, brother.
Sure, absolutely. Right. Thanks for having me on, Gardner.
Thanks, Brett. Folks, head over to the website. Don't forget, schoolsucksproject.com. That's where you go. And I'm telling you, you're going to be impressed.
Hey, just one more quick note on primary sources before we wrap up here today. Those history textbooks that you've been getting in school all these years, those are not based on primary sources. No, in fact, most of them are written from older versions of textbooks, which were written from even older versions of textbooks. And if you go back, you might find some source material like, ooh, a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow called The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, which he wrote 80 or 90 years after the American Revolution about the actions of somebody who was not even Paul Revere in order to generate Northern support for the Civil War. Listen, my friends, and you will hear some bullshit.
Dawn.